Yes Life Show, in which I talk to inspiring and key people within integrative oncology who are pushing the boundaries of what's possible in cancer treatment. This week, I'm talking over Skype to a lovely woman on the west coast of the US about the psychological and emotional challenges of cancer. Wendy Sejazy is herself a stage 4 cancer patient, someone who would be described as terminal, but who, as you'll hear, certainly doesn't sound like someone with one foot in the grave. Wendy's had a lifetime of dealing with depression and of looking for some meaningful answers, and it does seem she's found some and that they are an enormous help to someone like her having to face cancer. Hi Wendy, lovely to meet you over Skype. Yeah, I think we came across each other a few times on one of the many Facebook groups that's kind of changing the face of the way that people get their cancer information.
Yeah, glad to meet you.
You've got stage 4 cancer. That's not really an enviable position in anyone's book, and yet you describe yourself as happier and more peaceful than you've ever been. How come?
Wow, yeah, even to tell you the truth, even hearing you say that, I'm so grateful that I am that way. I came into this and a new understanding about life that's changed everything for me. And it's that life is just an inside job. What I started seeing is that I'm not experiencing my cancer. I'm not experiencing my circumstances in life. I'm always experiencing only my thinking about life, and my thinking is what I'm feeling. So, for instance, when I first was diagnosed, that was 2010, and knock wood, I'm still here, it's 2017. I had stage 3 cancer, and then it turned into stage 4. But when I first experienced cancer, the first 2 years, it was unbearable emotionally for me. I just would spin off into thinking, what do I do? Figure it out. Should I go traditional therapy? Should I do alternative therapy? And I was always in this state of fear, and I was always feeling, it was like a chronic state of stress and fear about cancer. When I started understanding that I'm always, as a human being, I'm always feeling my thinking, I'm not feeling my circumstance. When I started understanding that, and I started seeing a little bit more about that, I felt different about life. I continue to feel different about life. What does that sound like to you?
Well,
because I know that's really curious, probably.
No, it's good. I mean, you're talking about a kind of one step removed from your experience. Your mind is in the middle as an interpreter, and maybe you're describing circumventing that and actually getting directly in touch with what's going on.
Maybe, and what's going on is not, the cancer is not making me feel bad. It's my thinking about the cancer that's making me feel bad.
Right.
And I don't mean to sound Pollyanna, because I'm not a Pollyanna person. I've spent most of my life depressed. So we've got it backwards. We think we have to change the circumstances in the world. And let's even talk just cancer. Like, I would wake up in a sweat in the middle of the night, and I would be thinking, oh my God, I got to figure out what should I do next, what alternative, there's this, there's that, and I need to figure it out. And I thought in the middle of the night that I had to figure it all out at 2 o'clock in the morning, and then I could sleep and feel okay. I started seeing that I had it backwards. That I could feel okay, and from feeling okay, then I had a way better chance of figuring it out.
Okay, well look, we're going to go into all of this in a lot more detail. What I'd like to ask now is, the nature of your work, well, first of all, just to say that the nature of your work, it's applicable to everybody, of course. Everybody can use some peace of mind. But in this show, as far as possible, I want to focus on the particular challenges that are posed by the diagnosis, the treatment, and the life after treatment that comes with cancer. Your own situation, it certainly gives you the inside track on this stuff. This pursuit of peace and happiness is something that's been a bit of a lifelong mission for you. And then along comes cancer. And how did that change that pursuit of happiness and peace?
Well, I wasn't very successful to begin with in the pursuit of happiness and peace, even though I did a lot of techniques and went to a lot of seminars, taught. When I had cancer, I really saw that I had no peace of mind around it. I was a total mess. I was just like everybody else. I was scared. I had been very holistic most of my life. I had my babies at home. I believed in certain things. But then, of course, cancer happens, and it's scary. And the doctor says, you need to do this or you're going to die. And it was just unbelievable fear. I couldn't even sit with myself. I felt incredibly needy. I felt incredibly alone. I had the hardest, roughest time. So that's what's so cool about this, because that was in the very beginning when I didn't even have stage four, and now I have stage four, and I see those things as transient. Like some days I'm like, oh crap, I have cancer. But it's not something that makes my day horrible. It's maybe a feeling, like an acute feeling, and not a chronic feeling. It's not like I'm still human. I'm still a human being. I still feel things. I know I say we feel our thinking at any time, but our thinking is very compelling. So if it looks scary to us, it looks scary to us. So before, I used to think, for instance, that you have to think positive. I had all this from all my spiritual quest. I had a lot of ideas that actually weren't helping me feel more peaceful. I didn't know that the peace is found under the thought. Like the thought is always there, spinning, spinning, spinning. And when it settles down and calms down, then you're more available. It's like what they're always talking about, be present, be in the moment. Well, if you are busy in your intellect trying to figure it out at 2 o'clock in the morning, say that you're trying to figure out, what am I going to do next? Then I am so busy in that, that I can't settle down to see that I could feel good right now. And out of that feeling good, I'll see something else. Like I just had a client and I was he's a writer, and I was talking about writer's block. I said to him, did you ever feel writer's block? You're writing and you're just thinking and you just can't do it, and you're trying to figure it out and trying to figure it out. And the more you try to figure it out, the more you don't figure it out. And then you go and you have a shower, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, out of nowhere, you forgot about the whole situation. You know, so you're nodding your head.
Yeah.
So you know what I'm talking about. Like, what was your, you want to add your experience to that?
It was completely different, the one you reminded me of, but actually it was a bit like writer's block. I remember going to bed one night at 2 a.m., having got worked with a piece of programming where I felt I'd programmed myself into a dead end, and that I couldn't go, you know, it couldn't go on. I'd fundamentally gone the wrong direction. Went to bed, got up in the morning and sorted it straight away. Good night's sleep was all it needed, and the answer was there. You have to get out of the way sometimes.
You have to get out of the way. Yeah, it's like so. What's so funny is that this inside-out way of thinking is so simple that you just can't see that. It's so simple that you just have to get out of the way. Like any 2-year-old can tell you that just step out of the way and it'll come to you. But in terms of making decisions about cancer, it's the same as what we're talking about here. Like you just, when you get out of the way, It's like this, all this thinking, because we're thinking beings. That's what we do. It's a gift. We just use it wrong. So when that settles down and you're in the middle of a shower, you're like, oh, I have to see that doctor. That feels like the right move for me to make next. You know, where before in the middle of the night, I was thinking I have to know what to do to feel good. Just the little bit of feeling good first. I don't have to figure it out now to feel good. I could just let myself settle and it will come to me what to do next. Just as a new thought, and where that comes from, I have no idea. Where you got your idea, where it came from, it just comes from like a settled intellect.
Great. Okay, can we backpedal a bit now and just maybe you tell us a little bit about your journey. I try and sum it up as much as you can, starting from when you were a depressed little girl and what your journey looked like that got you to the place, let's say to the point where you were diagnosed.
Yeah. Let's see. A depressed little girl. When I was a teenager, my mom, I always say this, my mom used to say, seek ye first the kingdom within. Like before I would try to be successful, try to get some sort of peace of mind, but I never really understood what that meant. But I knew I felt depressed. So I went to different ashrams and seminars, worked for Tony Robbins, worked for Byron Katie, which are, I don't know if you know those people, but they're just some popular NLP.
I know of them.
So I just was searching, and just wanted to feel good like anybody else. I just felt depressed. And it wasn't because of the cancer that I started understanding about life. What it is that I follow or the understanding is from a guy named Sydney Banks. And it's at this point, it's called the Three Principles of Sydney Banks. And it's all over the internet. There's all kinds of teachers in it. There's a guy named Michael Neal that wrote a book called The Inside Out Revolution. There's Amy Johnson wrote The Little Book of Big Change. And they're all really pointing in this direction of how we already have everything we ever needed. Like, so I thought I had to go out and do a technique to fix myself. And I actually spoke in London last year at the biggest Three Principles conference there is. And I heard myself say, oh my gosh, I don't need to fix anything. And like, underneath all that thinking you have to do a technique or somehow meet a person that's going to fix you or whatever it was I was trying to do to feel better innocently, I didn't know that it was always, I was always whole, and we all are. We always have mental health underneath all this crazy thinking that we have. And so I'll tell you the story of how I came into this is, I don't know if my husband's going to get mad at me for saying this, but he was depressed and I'm like, just go see a psychiatrist or a psychologist already because, I didn't want to, he likes doctors. I like alternatives. So I'm like, if you like doctors, just go to one, you know, do something. And he went to this psychiatrist that quit whatever he did and just taught this inside out understanding, and he came back where he shifted. I don't know what this psychiatrist said, but he shifted and he felt differently. And I had never seen him do that before. And then I'm like, I want some of that. I'm going to go to that guy. I already had cancer. So I'm like, how do I figure this whole cancer thing out? And I feel terrible. So I know I went into his office. And I don't know exactly what he said, but I got so quiet in my mind that I started looking around and I felt like a newborn baby. I just saw his books on his shelf and I just felt like I didn't have any words. And from that quiet space, I just feel that everything's possible. It was such a beautiful feeling I left with. Then I went crazy and learned all I can. And I went to these people. They're called Pransky and Associates. And they had trainings. And I just started studying with them. And I continue to study with them. And I just started learning all I can about this understanding. And it's the first time in my life I really feel like there's nothing wrong with me emotionally, mentally. I'm fine. And even you have your moments. See, we're thinking human beings. We have like 45 to 100, something like that, thoughts a minute. I don't know exactly how many, but in a minute we have 45 thoughts. And we feel the ones we take seriously. We feel our thinking. And that goes across the board, whether we have cancer or anything, we're always feeling our thinking. And the reason I know that's true is because why can I have cancer today and feel like really afraid of cancer? And then why tomorrow am I having the most joyful life I ever had? Because I'm always feeling my thinking. I'm not feeling the circumstance. So we innocently do all this stuff with our thinking. We believe it. It's like a movie. So our thinking is really seductive. We're human. We think, and our thinking's seductive. So it reminds me of my husband. Where I wash the dishes, I could see him watching, The Walking Dead. He'll watch The Walking Dead. And he's in his big man chair watching The Walking Dead. And all of a sudden, he jumps up. He's like, oh, he's going to get you. And I'm cracking up at my husband. Because in that second, he is believing that that's true. You know, he knows he's watching TV. He knows he's sitting in a living room. But he believes it enough to jump up. Mm-hmm. And that's how our thinking is like running constantly, constantly. And it's like a movie, and we believe it, and we innocently react to our thinking. So, for instance, you know, if I'm believing that a doctor is not reading my charts and he's taking advantage of me in that moment, and I react to it, I'm in a worse... If I'm really thinking that's true, then I'm not as effective as I can be if I settle down and know, oh, that's just the movie that's running. Then I can calm down and settle down, and I could maybe ask the necessary questions to the doctor that would actually be helpful to me. I mean, I can't even tell you the many ways that this has helped my life. It not just cancer. Well, first of all, I'm living with cancer, and cancer, you know, I'm not one of those girls that says, yeah, it's a blessing, it's fantastic. You know, cancer basically, it's not pleasant to me. It's, you know, sometimes doctor's visits, it's inconvenient. You often have death sitting up there reminding you that you have a small amount of time left. You know, everyone who has cancer knows, you know, the thoughts that could run through your head. Well, why am I having cancer and happier than I ever was? Because something changed. I see even the days where I'm afraid of cancer, I see that that's my thinking, and I don't really have to engage that. And so that leaves me more to be present for what is. So I'm available to my relationships with my clients, my family, my life. So let's say if it doesn't really work out and I do die 2-3 years from now or 1 year or whatever, I'm 100% here now enjoying a conversation with you, enjoying my kids, enjoying my relationship with my husband. I'm not so busy in what's going to happen in the future. I'm available and present now. And it changes everything. It changes decisions. It changes my doctor's visits. Like, I could enjoy the nurses sometimes because I have the presence of mind. I could watch the patients getting all angry, and sometimes I'm able to be there for them. I don't know if you have any questions or what you hear me saying, or it sounds crazy to me that I'm this happy, to tell you the truth. I've never been happy. person, Robin. I've been a miserable, like, depressed girl, you know?
Mm. Well.
And it's not crazy. I'm not happy all the time. Don't worry. I have my...
Well, sure. You're dealing with stage 4 cancer for a start, and along with all the other trials of life. And it's never going to be a smooth journey all the time, is it? But I think what you're talking about is a lot more fundamental than the ups and downs on a day-to-day basis, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's the fundamental. You know, something recently happened with my husband and I, and when you say fundamental, it brings that up. We were at a seminar about this understanding, and the two teachers that I mentioned before, the Pranskys, they really saw something in the way that we relate that he thought that we had a somewhat of an adversarial relationship. And they worked with us in front of the group and spoke to us and two different times. And something about our relationship fundamentally changed, because the bottom line, when we saw that we could be grounded in a goodwill towards each other, it fundamentally changed. So just like you said, it's not all about the ups and downs. So it's almost as if I feel like we're built on very fertile, stable soil. And so we can have fights, because the fundamental grounding of our relationship has shifted. And then what has happened is there's not really a doing that we have to feel goodwill to each other. It's just fundamentally different. And that's what I feel about my life as well. It's not that I don't have ups and downs and I don't believe my thinking sometimes, like the movie of the zombies. It's not that that doesn't happen, but fundamentally, everything has changed in my life, and I can enjoy my life, where before I had cancer, so I was chronically in fear about cancer. And this understanding explains so much. Like, I was listening to a really, really great alternative cancer, I guess, coach, I'll call him. And he was talking about how when you have cancer, in order to heal, you have to heal the stress. And the way he spoke about it stressed me out, because it was as if stress comes upon you from cancer, it comes upon you from the outside world, that people make you stressed, your husband makes you stressed, your environment makes you stressed. There's no way out if that's the answer. If it's like I have to change everything in my life in order to not be stressed, in order to heal myself from cancer, then I'm really screwed. Because sometimes my husband's going to yell at me. Sometimes my work is going to be horrible. Sometimes the doctor is going to tell me something like I'm going to die if I don't do his treatment. So then I'm going to be stressed every time I go to the doctor, every time my kid yells at me, because I have teenagers, a teenager. You know what that's like. So it was the opposite of understanding that it's an inside-out job, because your thinking is causing the stress. It's not that my husband isn't yelling at me. He does do his little dance, because he's in his own little world about life at any moment. Like, we're always living in our thinking. So in his living in, reacting to his thinking, he might yell at me. But this gives me the immunity to go into the doctor's office, and he's a total jerk, and I could know that he does not make me feel bad, that it's my thinking. I'm always, always, always living in the feeling of my personal thinking. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to react occasionally like my husband did to the zombie show, because it looks like, in the moment that it looks like he's making me feel bad, that's just human. That's my innocence. That's just what it looks like. But then I have the chance of settling down and realizing, oh, okay, this is my thinking that's making me upset. And then once I settle down, just like the writer, when he settles down the intellect and he has a new thought, then I could proceed from a whole nother place in life. Not so much from the thinking, stressing myself out, gotta figure it out, gotta fight with my husband, need a divorce tomorrow, gotta get that kid out of that school and into that school. You know, like, you could just, it's endless what this human mind, how we can use our thinking in the opposite direction of the gift that it has been given to us, because it is a gift that we think.
Yes, indeed. It certainly is, and you're right that actually nearly all of its energy is expended in a very negative way, really, in a very destructive manner, unfortunately, in the world. So, you mentioned a little while ago about the fact that some people talk about cancer as a kind of gift. Hold on a minute, cancer's not that great, is it? But, nonetheless... It does, like, well, anything difficult in life actually prompts people to go beyond their normal status quo, if you like, to think outside the box, to maybe do things they wouldn't have done before. And, you know, we've been discussing the fact that you've found this extraordinary happiness in the midst of such difficulty. Another thing that people often report about cancer is related to autonomy. To their sense of who they are, their ability to know what's right for them, to, if you like, get in the driving seat of their own life. Do you think that there is a direct connection of some kind between the state of well-being, if you like, or happiness, inner peace that you've been describing, and this sense of autonomy?
Yeah, it's nice that cancer can do that for some people. I don't know if cancer is the cause of that, but maybe that in my eyes, what happens is maybe they've got no place to go. It's like for a little while when you're, it's like when you're really young and you think that once you, like I have a 22-year-old and I would guess that he thinks that once he's really successful in his world, in the world, then he'll have happiness and he gets married and a family. And you know, we're both a little older and he was thinking that when you're young, you think that you'll get all these things to then have happiness. And maybe for some people, they get cancer and they realize there's nowhere out there to go because there's nothing out there in the world that's going to give it to me. I have to come to a peace from inside of myself. So maybe it does bump them into realizing there's nowhere out there to go. There never really was anywhere to go. I mean, there's some, as we all know, there's very famous people that have suffered so much inside that maybe they saw that they got all the fame and fortune and everything, and then that didn't do the happiness thing for them. That didn't allow them to have inner peace that they thought. And then maybe they think there's nothing else out there, but it's just this misconception that there's something that's going to give you that good feeling. And maybe some people, not everyone, but some people, when they get cancer, they realize there might not be a tomorrow, so I have to live in the present. And I know that there's a book I've been reading a little bit, an old book by Stephen Levine called 1 Year to Live. Books I read years ago, and he's using that concept as a way to say, if you only have a year to live, you might as well enjoy it and be present right now. But when I used to hear those concepts about be present, I thought I knew, well, I knew what it meant and I know what it means, but now it's so simple because being present to me and being in the moment and all those catchphrases, or being in love with who you're with, all it means is dropping down out of the intellect and being here, kind of like in my heart, in wherever it was before there was thinking about anything. And we don't have to, thank God, we don't have to have cancer to come to the realization that we're these thinking human beings. And when we drop down into what's under that, like I was to somebody the other day about how to be with people with cancer. And a lot of cancer people, if you're listening to me, you know what it's like. People say the absolute, the most insulting, it's so insulting the things people say, it's almost funny. Like one gal on a thread I was following said to her, oh, you have, her best friend told her, well, at least you could get a free boob job or something like that. And she was mortified that someone would say that to her. And everybody's always walking around in their own world. So when somebody says the word cancer, the other person has all their fears. They don't even see the human being in front of them wanting help. And when you drop down out of your intellectual mind about what it would be like for you to have cancer or being helpful or anything like that, you just come back to the simplicity of life and being here now. Like I'm looking at your face, where even though we're on radio, I'm looking at you and you're looking at me and we're having this lovely conversation. What a blessing we get to do that, and you're across the pond. You're at night, I'm in the morning, you know? And at any moment in time, I'm one thought away, even if I have cancer, from just being 100% here, drop out of the intellectual thinking of what this is all about, me talking to you or me having cancer, and I drop down into that, and then we're just these two people relating to each other, enjoying each other. And at any moment in time, you can have that. And maybe cancer sometimes can remind people of that. And it's, you don't have to have cancer to remember that. You don't have to have a year to live. That it's funny that he, Stephen Levine, who's no longer here, used that concept to get people to bring them back down to enjoying their life on a day-to-day basis. But it's so simple now to me, because it's just, we think, we're thinking beings, and we think we know what we're thinking, and we think it's true, and we believe the movie, and sometimes you just drop out of it, and then you have a new idea, and you can be there with your, I have the 14-year-old, I have the 22-year-old, and when I drop out of all these concepts, I'm here enjoying them. I mean, I just feel like that's a miracle that I finally found that out at 56 years old, you know?
Better late than never, eh? Things like that. Very good. So I wanted to ask whether you think there's any direct relationship between the kind of inner peace that you've been talking about and the physical, because you're a person with cancer, okay? And do you think there's any direct relationship between your relationship with your thoughts and your general inner being and actually how your cancer progresses, how your treatment goes, your life expectancy maybe even?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. What I honestly think is, I don't know, since the way that the earth is, we live and we die, animals in the animal kingdom die, human beings die, I don't know if we can escape death. I don't know if we can get to this beautiful, happy place in life and then heal ourselves from cancer. But what I do believe, 100%, that if there's a chance of me healing my body, which I'm way into, I'm so excited about the possibility and the hope that I will find a way to rid myself of the cancer. My best shot at ridding myself of cancer is going to be from a state of mind, a state of understanding the way the human mind works. I think I have my best shot now in what I understand about life. Now, is there a guarantee? We all know there's no guarantees with anything. But it's kind of like, it's my son plays a lot of baseball. You guys have cricket. and he's very competitive in it. And we actually talk about state of mind in sports as well, because it's all the same. And you know that term, in the zone?
Mm-hmm.
So when he's up there, what do you guys call it, bowling? He's throwing the bowling. Ball, the bowler.
Mm-hmm.
When the bowler, or we call it the pitcher, is about to throw the ball, now he could throw him a ball that curves, a ball that's fast. He's going to do what he can to trick him. Now, if the person that's ready to hit the ball is in a state of mind unaffected by this human being thinking whatever it's thinking, if he's just grounded in the present moment, then he's going to not guarantee hit the ball, but he's going to have the best shot at it than somebody that's all thinking and trying to figure it out and thinking in the past of what the guy threw the ball before, how he threw the ball, or thinking about the future of where he wants to go. But if he's in the present moment, then he's going to have the best shot at hitting that ball. And the present moment, all I mean is dropping down out of the intellect like you do as a writer, where you're so busy in the intellect trying to figure out, what are you going to write? What are you going to write? Oh my God, and it's just not coming to you. And then you go in the shower and all of a sudden you drop out of all that craziness and a new idea comes to you. Well, when you're living with that kind of dropping down into just being here now and being out of that crazy intellect, which we innocently engage all the time, and then we're so innocent, you can't get mad at yourself for feeling that way. That's just what humans do. When we drop out of that, we have the best shot at anything. I mean, I know when I'm all wound up and the doctor's a jerk and I can't believe he's saying I'm going to die and he doesn't believe in my green juice and he's this and he's that, and when I'm all going crazy with that, there's not so much room for a new idea of what I want to do right now in this situation. Do I want to walk out? I'm not prescribing that you should walk out, you should yell at the doctor, you should find some, I don't know what you're supposed to do. But when you drop out of believing this constant intellect telling you, dictating you, you're like a dog on a leash, like it's just pulling you this way and that way. When you drop out of that, then you have the best shot of making the best choice for you. Because only you in there, you're a genius underneath all that craziness. You're a genius and you know what's best.
Mm. So you're ready to respond to what life throws at you.
Exactly.
It's interesting. So you're saying that on the kind of direct physical effect, you don't really know. But in terms of making all the best decisions for yourself, it definitely does have a big effect, because you're in a much better position to see what you need to do at every stage.
And of course, I think you're in a much better position to heal, because chronic stress on the body, they have done a lot of studies. I just saw one the other day. You might have seen that too, because you're on some of the same groups that I am. The chronic stress, I could see, and I'm not a scientist, but there are studies that say chronic stress wears down the body and makes you more susceptible to inflammation and whatever else. So if you're not in a chronic stress place, not only will you make better decisions, but I think it will avail healing to your body more so than sitting around and stressing. I mean, I'm in such a beautiful, happy place, more than I ever have been in my life. I think if there's any shot at healing, I think that I have a better chance than I ever did.
Right, so you're saying at least you're not being self-destructive.
Right. And even more than that, even right. maybe more.
Okay. Maybe a slightly esoteric question. Would you like to say something about the relationship between the kind of inner peace you've been describing, this way of relating to life, and love?
That's sweet. I don't think I've ever felt as much love for my husband or my kids. I mean, I've always loved my kids and my husband, but you know that picture of the dog on the leash that I was saying? Mm-hmm. Well, if my husband would react to me before, I would get so mad at him and have so many divorce thoughts. I remember one time I already was starting to understand what I'm talking about a little bit, but I don't know what he said, but I was so mad. And I went for a run and I was thinking that I needed a divorce and how am I going to have a divorce and I have cancer and blah, 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 blah. And then what happened is when that all settled down, we didn't ever have to go back into discussing what was said, our reactions to each other. When all that settled down, all there was is love. Like, what does this sound like to you? Is this just too Pollyanna, but could it be possible that love is our natural state? That's already there and it's covered by thinking?
More than possible, I'd say.
That's what it feels like to me when I step out of my intellect, my trying to figure it out. It's not a doing to step out of that. It just, as you understand that that's what's happening, it just sort of happens naturally. It's not like I have to go and think something different or get into, I'm just, when you're thinking and you're going all, you're believing your thoughts, it's innocent. It's just what human beings do. And as you understand that more and more, you just are able to be here and be present and just feel love, because I suspect that love and well-being is our natural state. It was always there, and we cover it with all our ideas and thoughts about how everything should be going or what we should be doing or who we are. That's what I think of it today.
Thank you. Okay, would you like to finish off the show by just giving our listeners who've been interested in what you're talking about any recommendations of great books, websites, anywhere they might like to pursue this a little bit?
Well, I have my website, which is under construction right now, and that is called wakeupyourwisdom.net or .com. But also, I could be reached on my email. I work with people, and it's wendybsinger@gmail.com. So it's spelled W-E-N-D-I, B as in boy, singer@gmail.com. I love Amy Johnson's book, The Little Book of Big Change, and I love Michael Neal's book, The Inside Out Revolution. Those are two to start. There's also another one by one of my teachers called Coming Home, and his name is Dickon Benninger. And there's a book that's going to have a revised edition by some teachers of mine also called Pransky and Associates. And the book is called The Relationship Handbook by George Pransky. And that's another fantastic book.
Great.
And you're welcome to call me. I have, I do webinars and emails and speaking engagements, and there's nothing I want to do more than this, because you just remind me of, even I am just a human being that thinks too, and sometimes I get all caught up, and when I get to speak to you guys, I remember, yeah, that's the love. It's already inside of you if you would just let it settle down. Stop trying to fix and micromanage everything. Micromanage your life and your kids' lives, and You know, we're just, we have innate well-being inside of us. So contact me if you want to ask anything. There's also a big giant conference in London in May. So just give me a call and let me know if you're interested in going to that.
Lovely. Well, look, I'll make sure that all those details you've just given are on our website so people can click through and see those books. So, look, a big thank you to you, Wendy, for joining us on the show today. It's been a real pleasure to talk about these things which are kind of they're central to all of our lives, but so often they don't even get talked about. It's been absolutely great. Thank you very much.
You too. Thank you so much, Robin. Pleasure to meet you.
I hope many of you found that helpful and inspiring. Wendy's delightfully down to earth about arriving at answers to some of the most central questions to human life. As usual, links to all the books and websites that she mentioned are on the Yes to Life website. That's yestolife.org.uk. Click Media Centre in the left-hand sidebar and then choose UK Health Radio. A reminder that the next in our series of Lifestyle Choices and Cancer seminars features Patricia Peat of Cancer Options and medical herbalist Kate Scott. It's in Manchester and it's on the 1st of April. Look at the events page of the Yes to Life website for more details and to book places. Next week, I shall be talking to a UK GP whose avowed ambition is to get nutritional science included in GP training. Goodbye.